Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated March 1st, 2016. We'll begin with an article on the first page called A Family's Dogged Pursuit. This was written by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer, and the dateline is Mechanicsburg. There is no statute of limitations on hope or love for a missing member of the family. And just because the one missing happens to have four legs instead of two, the pain of their absence is no less acute. We didn't realize dogs would become our family until we couldn't have kids, explains Sean Hamrick, who lives with his wife Shelley in the country near Mechanicsburg. To us, Sophie is like our daughter, Shelley added, and we want her back. Sophie is a 4-year-old Jack Russell Terrier who has been missing since November 18th, when she vanished from a boarding facility in Taylorville. The Hamricks had left her at 8 a.m. that day, along with their other Jack Russells, Rowdy, Sophie's brother, and Simon, the father of both dogs. The Hamricks had then set off for Ohio to watch a niece's basketball game and were ready for a relaxing excursion. But by 3:30 p.m., their world had developed a terrier-sized crack in it when a friend called to say a dog, the spitting image of Sophie, had been spotted running along the road to Langleyville, about a mile west of the Taylorville boarding business. When the Hamricks called the boarding facility to double-check on their dogs, they got the gut-wrenching news that Rowdy and Simon were all present and accounted for, but Sophie was gone. And so began a painstaking search with the thoroughness of a missing person's hunt that has consumed countless hours and cost the couple about $10,000 so far. Sophie remains gone, but the Hamricks believe in the gospel of no retreat, no surrender. They emphasize again there is no limit to hope or love when someone dear to you is in trouble. You don't give up on your family, said Shelley Hamrick, 46. This is the equivalent for us of losing a daughter. Their search had begun immediately as they abandoned their Ohio hotel upon getting the news and blasted the 5-hour drive back. Shelley Hambrick, who works in customer service for a major electrical wholesaler in Springfield, fired up the internet in the car and posted an all-points bulletin on Facebook. Initially, results were encouraging. Reliable eyewitness accounts tracked Sophie running towards Illinois 29, which she crossed and nearly caused an accident among swerving traffic. Scared, she sped off in an easterly direction, and the last solid sighting puts her near the Mount Auburn blacktop heading towards Willie's on Illinois 48 between 4:45 and 5 p.m., and there the lady vanishes. We believe someone pulled up to her and she got in their vehicle and they drove off with her, said Sean Hamrick, 49, who runs his own excavation, demolition, and scrap business. We know she was trying to get home. They're both confident she isn't dead, and they've been to great lengths to establish that. Along with friends and well-wishers and others, some perhaps encouraged by a $2,500 reward for Sophie's return, extensively advertised on flyers and in local papers. They've scoured the woods and fields in the area where the terrier was last seen on the run. Sean Hamrick took off work to pursue the search, and they've run down any promising lead or possible sighting, driving up to 50 miles to check out witness reports. We've walked every field, every ditch, everything within several square miles of the last sighting, he added. We were looking for her, dead or alive, because either one of those would give us closure. They've canvassed Illinois Department of Transportation workers, school bus drivers, garbage truck drivers, mail carriers, and anyone else with a job that takes them out and about. They've contacted every veterinarian within a 50-mile radius, and Shelley Hamrick is working up a list to send flyers to every veterinary clinic in the state. And in their boldest move yet, her husband has bought 2 used semi-truck trailers and is spending some $3,000 to have them wrapped in giant flyers advertising Sophie's disappearance and the $2,500 reward. After all that, the couple aren't sure what else they can do outside of prayer and tears, and they've already gone through plenty of both. When their dog was lost, it was wearing a collar laden with identification information, and it also had an implanted microchip under the skin with its ID details. If someone did pick Sophie up, their choosing not to call raises darker possibilities about getting the dog back. We're all old enough to know in this world that not everybody is a good person, Sean Hamrick said. But like his wife, he doesn't stay down for long. He remains convinced Sophie is alive and somewhere someone knows where she is and somehow will be persuaded to share their information. No, I don't see us quitting on this, he said. Sophie is always on our minds. His wife points to the vast network of friends and fellow dog lovers helping them search or just rooting for them. People we don't know and have never met who have befriended me on Facebook, she says, and when I get down, they somehow seem to know, and they will send me a message saying, just thinking of you today, praying for Sophie. We know she is out there, and you are going to find her. Really and honestly, it's the people like that who help keep me going. We turn now to page 3 with more news of local interest. This headline reads, City to Provide Money for Job Training, and the author of the article is Allison Petty. More workforce training and education opportunities could open for Decatur residents this year through the city's allocation of federal funding. The city is making $100,000 of its Federal Community Development Block Grant money available to agencies and nonprofit organizations that help low to moderate income residents. They can apply for grants to provide programs related to adult literacy, life skills, training, and employment. This is quoting Rochelle Irons. This is another avenue for us to train and create a strong, skilled workforce so that we as a community are more attractive and more successful and more employable, said Rochelle Irons, the city's director of neighborhood services. The money could only be used to provide a new service or to expand an existing service, Irons said. Grant amounts cannot exceed $50,000 per organization. Individuals who will benefit must be Decatur residents who meet income guidelines. The city began accepting applications for the grants Monday and will continue until April 4th. An orientation for applicant organizations will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday in the first floor classroom at the Decatur Civic Center. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development awarded about $1.5 million in federal funding to the city last year through two sources, CDBG and HOME Investment Partnership Funds. The money can be used for various priorities, including demolition of unsafe structures and help for low-income homeowners whose houses don't meet health and safety code standards. The city last provided CDBG money for workforce training in 2012 when it gave funding to Workforce Investment Solutions. Iron said that program was very successful. "It all ties in together," she said. "If we have a strong workforce that is employable and skilled, then that's attractive to businesses and entities that want to start and open things there. It comes right back around." Allison Petty also writes the following article, "Plant Colors, Spring Forth." For those drowning in winter doldrums, there's an escape hatch on the east side of town. Inside the Schaub Floral Display Center, blooming flowers offer a fragrant reminder that warmer days are just around the corner. The room is brimming with azaleas, tulips, begonias, orchids, daffodils, and hyacinth, in addition to an array of tropical plants and even a small group of goldfish swimming in the pond. It's all part of the Decatur Park District's Spring Plant Show, which opened Saturday. "People are ready for a burst of color and fragrance," said Josh McGrath, horticulture superintendent for the district. "Everybody's ready for spring this time of year." The display center is open from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily for anyone who wants to breathe in the promise of spring. While the show runs until March 31st, McGrath said the view will be most colorful for the next 2 weeks. One striking sight are the towering elephant ear tropical plants, which grew outside last year and were moved into the display center during the cold weather. Several are 4 or 5 feet tall, and their expansive foliage is impossible to miss. McGrath and Assistant Superintendent Steve Goodner were hard at work Friday, nestling the plants in their temporary home. "Winter provides an opportunity to plan for the coming season, order plants, wash pots, and maintain the greenhouse," but they were eager to return to dirtier work. "We've been itching to get in there and do some planting," McGrath said. The display will change by the time the district hosts its annual spring plant sale over 2 weekends in April and May. The horticulture staff will take on some new challenges this year. Renovations to the Oriental Garden near Scoville Zoo are on the agenda, as well as work on the garden in front of the Schaub Center. The district is now hiring part-time seasonal workers to help bring the full horticulture staff up to 8. We turn now to an article about education written by Valerie Wells. The headline is "Students Assemble Facts into Wax Museum." Nelson Mandela was deep into his role at Durfee Magnet School on Monday. When asked his real name, he said it was Nelson Mandela. "I saved the world," said Quamar White, who finally divulged his real name. The fourth grader and his classmates' Black History Month project was a wax museum with students portraying the historical figures. A donation to the school triggered the wax figures to tell their stories, while behind them, poster boards showed their most recent Twitter and Instagram account updates. Teacher Caleb Davis had planned the usual research and report for his students, but then he had a better idea and thought of a way to help the kids relate to people who, to them, are little more than pictures and stories. "I was going to have them do an ordinary report," Davis said, "but then I thought, we've been doing that forever. I wanted to do something more innovative, more creative. So what I did was take the African Americans from our past and brought them to our present day. I used Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and I gave each one of the African Americans their own social media account and had the students come up with tweets, tweeting events from their life as real-life tweets, but they're really events that happened in their lives." MacArthur High School students also pitched in to help, Davis said, and he couldn't have done it without them. The Wax Museum was supposed to have taken place on February 26, but the rest of the school held its Black History Month assembly that day, so he pushed his students' presentations back to Monday, and he was a little worried that they wouldn't have an audience. However, several parents and fellow students attended, and Davis said he was pleased with both the turnout and how well his students performed. Baseball fan Jamari Tenen said he didn't need to do a lot of research to prepare his presentation on Jackie Robinson because he already knew most of it from being a fan. Madam C.J. Walker, known to her friends as Shaquela Miller, was resplendent in a fake fur jacket that made her stand out even from across the room. Jakeja Jones, who chose Shirley Chisholm, said the Twitter part of the project was the toughest for her. Condensing events into a few words and doing it in a short time frame isn't the way she works best, she said. But I did it, she added, and I got it done. Respect is Nakia Cobb's favorite Aretha Franklin song and her reason for choosing the Grammy-winning Queen of Soul to portray is straight to the point. She never gave up, Nakia said. She's hardworking. Also on page 3, we find news of crime and the courts. First, this short announcement headline, Decatur woman wounded. A Saturday night shooting sent one person to the hospital. Police were called to the Masonic Temple about 8 p.m. related to shots fired during a wedding. A female victim was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital after being wounded in the leg. Her condition is unknown. No arrests have been made, and anyone with information is asked to call 217-424-2734 or 424-2711 or Crime Stoppers at 423-TIPS. The next article was written by Huey Freeman, and the headline reads, "Driver in crash that killed woman pleads guilty to aggravated DUI." As the jury trial was about to begin for James Comp on Monday, he pleaded guilty to a charge related to the death of a 20-year-old woman. Comp pleaded to aggravated driving under the influence of alcohol. for driving a vehicle that resulted in the death of a passenger, Sarah J. Barnett, on the city's east side in 2014. At the time of this incident, Comp, now 26, had three prior cases for driving under the influence. One conviction for aggravated driving under the influence in 2010, and pending cases of DUI in 2013 and aggravated DUI in 2014. His driver's license was suspended at the time of the crash. Comp will be sentenced May 5th to a maximum of 12 years in prison in the fatality case, as well as a consecutive one-year sentence in the other 2014 case. As part of the plea deal, the 2013 case was dismissed. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott told the court Comp was driving a speed of 51 to 66 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour zone when he lost control of the Pontiac Firebird the night in July 2014. The vehicle, with three passengers, struck a tree on the 1900 block of East Wood Street. Barnett was described in her obituary as a Christian woman who loved life, her family, and friends. She enjoyed music and playing softball through the Decatur Park District. Another woman, who was 21 years old at the time, suffered a broken neck, bleeding on her brain, multiple facial fractures, and severe lacerations. A male passenger walked away from the crash. Scott told Associate Judge Jeffrey Geisler that crime lab test results showed that Comp's blood alcohol count at the time of the accident was 0.139%. That is nearly twice the legal limit. He also had cocaine and cannabis in his system. In exchange for his guilty plea, nine other felony counts were dismissed. Scott said that Barnett's father was agreeable to the terms of the plea deal. Comp was represented by Assistant Public Defender Scott Reuter. Assistant State's Attorney Diane Corey was the second prosecutor in the case. If you've ever eaten a Subway sandwich, you might be interested in this article from New York. Subway to ensure footlongs measure up. Subway customers can finally rest assured that their footlong sandwiches will be as long as promised. A judge last week granted final approval to a settlement of a class action suit filed against Subway after an Australian teenager in 2013 posted an image of his sandwich on Facebook that was only 11 inches. The image garnered international media attention, with the New York Post writing that it found 4 out of 7 footlongs it purchased in New York measured only 11 or 11.5 inches. A judge had given preliminary approval in October to a settlement between the Subway's parent company, Doctors Associates, and plaintiff's attorneys. Final approval was granted on February 25th. As part of the settlement, Subway agreed to institute practices for at least 4 years to ensure its bread is at least 12 inches long. The judge approved $520,000 in attorney fees and $500 for each of the 10 individuals who were representatives of the case. Of the class, but no monetary claims were awarded to potential members of the class. It was difficult to prove monetary damages because everybody ate the evidence, said Thomas Zimmerman, who was co-lead attorney for the class. Zimmerman said the attorney fees are being split among 10 law firms. Subway said in a statement that it was pleased the judge found no wrongdoing on its part. Lynn Edelman, a judge for the U.S. District Court, Eastern District of Wisconsin, wrote in the final approval that the plaintiff's attorneys realized their claims were quite weak after initial mediation session. Instead of trying to get class certification for monetary damages, he said plaintiffs decided to focus on injunctive relief, requiring Doctors Associates to ensure its sandwiches are at least 12 inches long. Edelman wrote that the plaintiff's attorneys learned Subway makes its bread with dough sticks that weigh the same when they arrive at stores frozen. The dough is then thawed and stretched before baking, a process that can lead to variability in the size and shape of the resulting bread. While the dough may have different shapes, it still has the same quantity of ingredients, Edelman wrote. The amount of meat and cheese is also standardized, but it's possible that a shorter bread loaf might lead to slightly less toppings. For instance, a sandwich, this is a quote, a sandwich that was 1/4 inch shorter than advertised might be missing a few shreds of lettuce or a gram or two of mayonnaise, the judge wrote. But Edelman also noted that sandwiches are made in front of the customer, who can ask for more toppings. Thus, the plaintiffs learned that, as a practical matter, the length of the bread does not affect the quantity of food the customer receives, Edelman wrote. Still, Subway agreed, as part of the settlement, to take steps to ensure its bread is at least 12 inches long, including requiring franchises, quote, to use a tool for measuring bread, unquote. In the briefs column, we find this: drug prices spike. The average cost for a year's supply of a prescription drug doubled in just 7 years to more than $11,000, about 3/4 of the average annual Social Security benefit. That's according to the latest study of price trends for widely used drugs conducted by the AARP. It finds prices for existing drugs, driven entirely by manufacturer price hikes, have been rising more quickly since 2007 and likely will continue to do so. AARP says its research shows drug makers' price hikes imposed one or more times a year are making prescription medicines increasingly unaffordable for retirees and many other patients. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the March 1st issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.